2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome in to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer. We're continuing our Top 10 Prospects podcast series today with the Minnesota Twins system. We're going to look at Royce Lewis and what's next after he sadly tore his ACL for the second time in 2 years, the excitement behind Emmanuel Rodriguez, and where the Twins prospects fit with the team trying to compete for another playoff appearance. To do all that, I'm joined by JJ Cooper. JJ, thanks for joining me.
Glad to be here.
All right, JJ, before we dive into the Twins system, we do need to talk about where this franchise is because they're in a little bit of an interesting place. They've had two straight losing seasons. Last year, they were in first place into early August, but really collapsed at the end of the year. They went 11-22 from September on and finished under 500 for the second straight year. But that hasn't deterred them. They re-signed Carlos Correa after he did not sign with the Giants or Mets due to concerns about his physical. They traded for Pablo Lopez. This is a team that's been trying to add for a while. We saw last offseason they traded for Chris Paddock. They signed Carlos Correa in the first place. So this is a team that is trying to contend and adding pieces to do so. With that, the farm system has lost some depth, but there are still some good players here. When you look at the Twins, how do you kind of assess where they are as a franchise, especially in the context of being in the AL Central?
So I've done it before, and I'm back doing the Twins list, and I try to keep track of kind of what's being said, what's being written about teams that I do the 30s for. And the sense I get is that Twins fans are kind of a little frustrated these days, which I get. They haven't won the last 2 years. They haven't won a playoff series in longer than anyone would like to remember, to admit. But at the same time, I do look at when you talk about kind of these, you call the Twins a small revenue team. They're big at best, a mid revenue team. And especially now that they've brought Carlos Correa back, I look at this and say, I feel like that this is a team that's had a very strong offseason, adding a middle of the order shortstop to a team that also has gone out. The Lopez trade plays a part in this too. Although, man, I did discover from that Twins fans, they do love themselves Luis Arias. It's a very good player, but man, the hatred of that trade kind of shocked me because it just felt like a pretty straightforward, good baseball trade. Like both teams got something of value. The fact that the Twins got prospects back in addition kind of made me go, oh, I think it looks like a good trade for the Twins. But I feel like that this is a team that has fixed what was their biggest problem in the last 2 years. In the last 2 years, if you say, why have the Twins not been as good as they wanted to be, as Twins fans wanted them to be?
Pitching.
Two things. I would say pitching, but I would say it's pitching and depth, because they are a team that when their lineup also, when everyone's healthy and everyone's playing at full speed, they were fine. And then when injuries arose, then all of a sudden you went from having Byron Buxton, who, playing great defense in center field, hitting homers, all that, to, oh, it's Kyle Garlick today. Oh, it's Gilberto Celestino more than we want to see Gilberto Celestino. Oh, man, Jake Cave's out there a lot. And so it went from, you went to a situation in the last 2 years, you've had situations where it's like they're playing players who you really probably want to play 20 games a year, and they're playing 100 games a year. And they've done that. Pitching has also done that. It's like they would start the season. It's like if everyone stayed healthy in this rotation, they'll be okay. And then it was like, wow, Devin Smeltzer is getting more starts than maybe they wanted him to. Or again, just go down the list of these guys. And this has happened multiple years. Now I feel like that this 2023 Twins team, I would describe it as a team that if they have a problem, I don't know who their number one starter is, because this is a rotation of, I would describe it as number threes to number four starters. But I also don't know who their number five starter is, because I could almost argue, if you want to say that Tyler Mahle could be their best starter or it could be their worst of their projected rotation, I could make the argument. If you said Joe Ryan fits somewhere in that range, Pablo Lopez is probably more at the front in that range, I would say on that. But Kenta Maeda, you know, if healthy all year, is a guy who you're like, okay, this guy has had stretches of being really effective. They've just got a they have managed to get themselves to a point now where when, not if, let's just be clear right now, when Byron Buxton goes on the IL at some point, because his knees do seem like that is something where it's just something you should pencil in as part of a year. Michael A. Taylor is a great caddy, like a guy who you don't want him to be your center fielder for 140 games. But if you said he needs to play center field for you for the next 2 weeks, you're fine. You're not looking at this and saying, oh, how are we going to struggle through this? We're going to talk about Royce Lewis at some point on this. When you say to me, though, where does Royce Lewis play? Right now, we don't have an answer for that. It's kind of probably be they're going to have this guy at the midpoint of the season's ready to go. And where was he going to play? Kind of wherever they have a need at that point. You know, where is, you know, they have more outfielders than really that they have spots in the outfield right now. They have depth. If they lack something, it's you'd love to see come postseason. I don't love their rotation if they're matching up against a team who has front of the rotation guys. They don't have that. But as far as getting through a season, they seem well equipped to be an effective team even when injuries strike.
Yeah, I mean, the Twins have five good starters now, and they haven't had that in a while. And most of them are guys that have been acquired in the last 2 years. Sonny Gray and Tyler Molle acquired in trades last year. Pablo Lopez acquired in a trade. Joe Ryan acquired in a midseason trade July 2021 as a prospect. So they've done a nice job of acquiring guys that can really, you know, give them a good deep rotation almost entirely in trades. Kenta Maeda was a trade acquisition. Chris Paddock is on the IL after having Tommy John surgery for the second time, but he's a trade acquisition. They've, you know, acquired really six at least cromulent big league starters, and a couple of whom are certainly above average big league starters, Sonny Gray, Pablo Lopez. Now, Luis Arraez was a big player to give up. This is a really, really, really good hitter. But the Twins did have a lot of middle infield kind of depth, and he was playing a lot of first base, which wasn't ideal. So I understand why they did it, but I also understand that that's a little bit of a hurt giving up Luis Arraez after he wins a batting title and is just such a good pure hitter. But this is a team that is built to win this year. And now, like you said, it's a matter of health. They have had a very active and I think sneaky good offseason. Again, getting Pablo Lopez he's a good pitcher, even if giving up Luis Arraez hurts. You know, Kyle Farmer and Michael A. Taylor, you talk about two really, really good bench pieces that you feel pretty good about. If someone gets hurt, you have to give them a little more extended playing time. You feel better than you would have in previous years with some of your guys. Christian Vasquez to catch is a really good player and an upgrade over Gary Sanchez. I mean, the only move that makes me raise my eyebrows a little bit is giving Joey Gallo $11 million. At best, that's an enormous risk. At worst, and I think probably likely, it's going to end up being a sunk cost. But if you make four good moves and one doesn't work out, it's still a ratio you're okay with. Is this team truly a competitor? Because we saw last year, again, they were in first place through early August, but they really tailed off. The Guardians look really, really good. And importantly, we're moving away from an unbalanced schedule this year. So the Twins have fewer games they get to beat up on the Royals and some of the weaker teams in the AL Central.
I do think I do think so, because I do think that depth should play out for them. When I've looked at, when you say, why is this Twins team, when they struggle at times, they've had days in the last 2 years where they put outfields out there and you're saying, okay, in an ideal world, everyone in this outfield should be playing in AAA. Everyone. And there are days that they put out there and after you say, in an ideal world, not everyone in this outfield should be playing in the AAA outfield. Like, they've had kind of these days where, like, they just don't have enough. They've put starting pitchers out there at times where you're like, yeah, this is probably going to go poorly for them today before the game ever begins. I still feel like that they're probably a reliever or two short of where you want to be right now, but it's February as we record this, and it's not the back of their bullpen. They've got Yoan Duran is great, and Jorge Lopez, that's a good starting point. I just don't know who's going to fit in with them. But that's as opposed to at this time, you know, what, last year, I think they began the season saying we've got Duran, who was not as proven, and Angel Pagan. I mean, like, it's
Emilio Pagan.
And it's better than that. So,
Gopher Ball Central, Emilio Pagan, yes.
So what I would say with all of this is they are, I feel like, in a better spot as far as that. But at the same time, and what's interesting about that is as we start diving into the prospect side of this, not many of these guys that we're going to talk about really fit into their 2023 plans if things go well. Because this is a team that now, you mentioned, like, Joey Gallo is a risk. I don't think there's any question. But the thing that's good for the Twins is they're not going to, in a situation where they have to say Joey Gallo is out there and it doesn't matter whether he hits, you know, he's the best version of Joey Gallo or the worst version. We don't have a choice. He's part of an outfield where we just talked about it's Buxton and Gallo and Taylor and Kepler and Larnach and, you know, potentially Royce Lewis. And if you needed to, Nick Gordon can play out there. He's played out there before. And we could, Alex Kirilloff's probably going to play first base, but Kirilloff's play, like, there's a lot of guys. They have a lot of options at these spots with, before we ever get to the Matt Wallners of the world, a guy who did reach the majors for them last year, you know, and was playing pretty regularly at the end of the season.
Yeah, again, there's no question. There's more depth here. It's a better pitching staff, and we'll see if they're able to get back into the winning record, the winning side of things. It is kind of surprising that when you look at it, they've had a losing record each of the last two seasons, but like you said, just they haven't had quite enough to get through the year. All right, JJ, that brings us to the top 10 in this system, and you've talked about him a little bit already, Royce Lewis. I want to actually ask you more about the construction of the list here and the decision between Royce Lewis and Brooks Lee, who was their first round pick and really just a guy they got as a steal as far down the draft as they did. Royce Lewis is tremendously talented. Number one overall pick in 2017. Had some things he had to work through, but the talent, and the athleticism, and the makeup have always been really, really apparent. Came back from a torn ACL last year and looked like he'd really figured it out. Like, the swing was where it needed to be. Just as a baseball player, he had truly blossomed. He performed at AAA. He came up to the majors. He showed some really good things there. Looked like he was going to be there to stay. And then he tore his ACL again. Just an awful, awful, awful run of luck for a really, really talented young player. He's hopefully going to be back at some point this season, barring any setbacks. What's the outlook for him right now? And ultimately, how did you end up deciding whether to put him or Brooks Lee number one when as talented as Lewis is, he does now have, you know, two ACL tears that have sidelined him for significant time?
Right. It does seem crazy to say, but I really actually do think that Royce Lewis is, I feel better about him as a prospect this year than I did going into last year. And that's kind of why he's number one. And that sounds weird because
he hadn't played since 2019. So yeah, I mean, right. Yes.
but what I'm saying, Lewis, is, but he came into last year with injury concerns, and then he seemed to verify those injury concerns by blowing out his knee again. But the flip side of it is what you just said a minute ago, which is offensively, there have been questions. He's had times where he's really struggled. He's had to fix some things in his swing. And what we saw when Royce Lewis was healthy last year was a much better, a much more complete offensive player than the one that we saw the last time we saw him, which again was a long time ago. You know, we did get some AFL and all that, you know, but like it was, you know, we had not seen Royce Lewis have this sustained stretch of offensive impact in quite a while. And I think a key component of this is like, when you try to combine scouting and data, there are data points that are kind of, I would describe as noisy. And there are other points that stabilize pretty quickly. And one of the hardest things to fake, if you say, oh, this guy's average exit velo is pretty high. Okay. Well, you can, I don't mean fake, but that can be something that there's some noise to, right? If you say that this guy has a 320 batting average, but he did it in 100 at bats, that's something that, okay, let's see what he does over another 200, 300 at bats, right? Sometimes you don't want to make over sweeping generalizations off of something like that. But one thing that does stabilize pretty quickly, hitting the ball hard and consistently hitting the ball hard is something that the data on that stabilizes pretty quickly. That even in Royce Lewis's very limited minor and major league season last year, he hit the ball really hard consistently. And that makes me feel better about him as an offensive player than I did coming into the year. Two knee injuries, two significant, two ACL tears is not great. There's not a whole lot of medical research on that for baseball players because we just don't have a whole lot of baseball players who've torn their ACL twice, but we do have it in football. There's other sports too, but I looked at it and then tried to look at some of the medical research on this in football because there are orthopedists out there that will do studies as far as return to play rates, effectiveness, all that. And one of the things that stands out with a second ACL injury to the same knee in football, in pro football, is the success rate of players coming back from that is actually quite high. It's not something where having one ACL injury is fine because we've seen 1,000 players come back from that. But a second one means you have a chronic problem that really – there's a pretty high success rate of second ACL injuries, return rates being very similar to first ACL injuries. So that kind of diving in and doing the research on that made me feel better about Royce Lewis's chances of coming back from a second significant knee injury. He's obviously not going to be their shortstop, they would hope now, because they have this guy named Carlos Correa. But I do view him as kind of the Swiss Army knife of the 2023 Twins season. He may push to be ready for opening day, but I think the realistic timetable on him being ready to go is a little later than that. But when he is ready, this is a guy who I feel like, take catcher out of it, he could almost play anywhere else if the Twins needed it. I'm not joking when I say, if you said at midpoint of the season, their biggest problem is first base, okay, make Royce Lewis your first baseman for the rest of the year.
I think realistically you'd move, if Kirilloff got hurt, you'd probably move Jose Miranda to first and then Lewis.
I don't disagree, but if you're in a scenario where Jose Miranda has somehow, and I do mean somehow, been a revelation at third base where it's like, wow, this guy's way better defensively than we ever imagined, you could put Royce Lewis first. I agree with you. That seems like the most likely thought is let's take our limited third baseman defensively. Royce Lewis will be better, but he can play in the outfield. He can play almost anywhere. And that's a really useful player.
Yeah, I was going to ask positionally where he fits best. He has seen, when I say time in center field, one game at St. Paul last year and one game in Minnesota last year. And even that one game was only 3 innings in center field. So he doesn't have a ton of experience in center. He's played 2 games
and
in left.
And blew his knee out. Short. I should go. Sorry, blew his knee out in that third inning, which is why he only played 3 innings.
Yeah, where he has played a little more now, it's been a few years, but in the fall league in 2019, and again, it's been a few years at this point, mm-hmm. he primarily played third base, and that was where he was actually really impressive. I remember just watching him out there. He was really impressive offensively because that was where you saw the swing was finally coming together. Everything was in sync, and okay, this is the player we want to see. But he was also pretty darn good over at third base, kind of led to the belief that, okay, if he does move off of short, there's been thoughts that he could play center since he was in high school, since I saw him at Jay Sarah. And you obviously saw the athleticism for him to do it. But just seeing him in the fall league, watching him play third, it's like, you know, you can put him there and he has a chance to be really good over there. Just looking at the Twins, given Byron Buxton's on a long-term deal, obviously has injuries. Carlos Correa at short is on a long-term deal, although there's concern about his ankle. It does seem like when Royce Lewis comes back, the best fit would be for him to go to third base. Do you see that, or do you see him more that Swiss Army knife where short today, center the next day, third the next day?
I think a lot of that depends on Jose Miranda. I'm probably kind of a skeptic, not on Jose Miranda the hitter, but on Jose Miranda the third baseman. If Jose Miranda in the first half or whatever period of time it is that you need to get a full evaluation shows himself to be really stretched there at third, which I think is a reasonable, like is a very possible outcome. if that happens, the most logical thing you do is you say, Royce Lewis, you're our third baseman. You still have Kyle Farmer to be your backup at second, short, and third. So it's not like you don't have a capable backup at all those positions. You also have Nick Gordon, who's played all those guys. You have multiple other kind of utility guys. That makes the most sense. And like, if you look at it long-term also, if you look at, to me, where just long-term where the Twins are going to need Royce Lewis, if you say that Carlos Correa, assuming that his ankle is, you know, capable of him holding up at shortstop for multiple years to come, the most logical spot for Royce Lewis is third base, because they don't really have, like, there's not a whole lot of other options at third base coming up through the minors, other than Brooks Lee, who also could play. We could be playing the same game with Brooks Lee that we're playing with Royce Lewis. But those are kind of the two guys who are logical at third base or second going forward. It does not make sense to me to move Royce Lewis to the outfield when he's capable of playing in the dirt, unless calamity strikes. So third is the most logical spot for me, but with the idea that he's also enough of a backup, like kind of like what Alex Bregman did with Carlos Correa in Houston, where it's like, ideally he's your third baseman who on a day that Correa's DHing or whatever, you slide him over to short. You don't want him to forget how to play short, but you don't make it his primary position because you've got your franchise player at short.
Absolutely. Again, hopefully Royce Lewis is able to pick up where he left off last year. Certainly really, really promising. It was really, really a bummer to see him tear his ACL a second time. But again, we'll see what he's able to do, and hopefully he's able to come back healthy and continue to produce. All right, JJ, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to dive into the rest of the system after that. Keep it here on the BA Prospects Podcast.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out. And when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
All right, we are back breaking down the Minnesota Twins farm system. I'm Kyle Glazer alongside JJ Cooper. All right, JJ, we talked about the Twins outlook as a whole, Royce Lewis, how he fits into that. The other player who is kind of in the mix here to be the number one prospect in this system and is really not that much further behind Lewis on our top 100 is Brooks Lee. He fell to the eighth overall pick in the draft last year. And frankly, just looking at who went ahead of him, there's at least two guys he's significantly better than. And in a lot of ways, the Twins got lucky he fell. This was one of the best pure hitters and really the best pure hitter in college baseball last year. I remember being at a game where he was out with Cal Poly and talking to an evaluator and watching both of his swings. I was talking to an assistant GM and made the point. It's like, I love how he's a switch hitter. It's like, I love how his right-handed swing is his bad swing. And it's still like a better swing than 90% you'll see out there. Another evaluator I spoke to made the point where if you like him, he's a 70 hitter. If you don't like him, he's a 60 hitter. The guy can just absolutely hit. There's just health concerns and some positional questions. What do the Twins have here? And I have to ask, were they doing, you know, backflips that they got him at eighth overall?
I think they were quite happy that, yes, that he was still sitting there on the board when they got to pick. And it did make that, you know, kind of a little bit easier, a little easier decision. The thing that just stands out is what you said, which is this is a player. Are there players who could end up being better than Brooks Lee in the draft? Sure. But if you want to say guys that you're just confident are going to play in the big leagues and probably move pretty quickly to that spot to where they're playing the big leagues before too long, Brooks Lee's very high up on that list. If you're nitpicking him, he's probably, I mean, again, he's a shortstop who's not a shortstop long-term. When we talk about Royce Lewis as a shortstop who's going to move, I would say with that if you were in a different situation, Royce Lewis could play shortstop long-term.
Right.
I wouldn't say that with Brooks Lee. Like, Brooks Lee is drafted as a shortstop, but with the idea, and again, ideally, it's third. If you said, where does he fit long-term, you just move him to third, you let him hit, he should be at least average, if not above average defender at third. And just plug him into your lineup in a couple of years. Like, the funny thing is the closest guy, they're different how they do it. But like, if you said production wise, what do you kind of hope to see out of Brooks Lee? It's kind of, you hope to see what you saw out of Luis Arias in many ways, like, which is a guy who hits 300 in a good year, hits 310, you know, in a really good year. And just battles and gives you great at bat after great at bat. I think that there's power there, but I don't think it's ever going to be the key part of this game. I think it's going to be a hit first approach. But, and as you said, he's not far behind. This is a guy who should move very quickly through the minors, just because there's so much polish, there's so much understanding of the game where, like, you're going to send him out, I would imagine, this year on an aggressive assignment with the expectation that he'll handle that aggressive assignment. And by midseason, be looking and saying, okay, send me up another level. I'm ready to go. And it's not crazy to say that in 2024, you could be looking at, okay, is this guy ready at some point in 24 to help the big league club?
Yeah, he got to Double A last year after being drafted. And like we've said, I mean, this is a surefire, as long as he stays healthy. And that is the big thing with him I want to address with you. I mean, 290 with 15 homers is the low end, and 310 with 20 homers is very possible and realistic. He's always looked more like a second baseman than a third baseman to me, just in terms of the actions, the way he moves. But if you want to stick him at third, he can certainly do it. I will say the one big caveat with all this is he has a pretty lengthy injury history with his back. There's been a lot of pulls and strains. Things have just, you know, knocked him out for a little bit here and there. And that's a big reason why he fell to eighth overall. Because on talent, again, there's at least two guys that went ahead of him. He's way more talented than, and you can argue more than that. But the health is a concern. How do you kind of assess that?
Twins fans are like, oh, so wait, let me back up here for a second. So you're saying a really talented player who has trouble staying on the field. Huh. Okay, have we ever had anyone like that? Like, again, you can't help but think of, they're very different players, but like, I do think that he is a guy kind of like Byron Buxton in some way, where you're not penciling in for 160. You're really looking at, you'd love to get a good 130 out of Brooks Lee going forward, just because there is enough of an injury history that some of this almost, I would best describe it as, he has enough recurring issues that you could kind of think of it as preventative in some ways, potentially, where you're like, we're going to shut you down for 2 weeks so that this minor problem doesn't become a major one. Now, there always are examples. Like, there are examples of players, Anthony Rendon's injury history in the college baseball and in the minors was pretty horrific. And then it kind of, a lot of that was fluky though, right? It was, he'd get hit on the hand. There were broken bone type things. Brooks Lee's are more of the kind where it's like, no, this is more of repetitive type injury. These are
the back issues have been around since he was in high school. They've been around for a while. Yeah, so, no, we'll see. But
I think that's the concern. Yeah. That's why he was part of one of the reasons he was there at that spot.
Yeah. Nonetheless, a really talented player. And if you just, you know, judging the talent, certainly a guy who is firmly top 100 and has a chance to have been a steal for the Twins in the draft at eighth overall. JJ, I do want to ask you about number three prospect on this list, Emmanuel Rodriguez. As we were putting this together, these were the clear-cut top three prospects. Rodriguez, talk about, again, really talented player, did not stay on the field last year. There's a little bit of a theme here. You know, Royce Lewis, Brooks Lee did stay on the field last year, but he has a lot of injury concerns in his past. Emmanuel Rodriguez only played a half season, but what a half season it was. What do the Twins have here, and what do you make of him, and how do you judge it when it was kind of a small sample, as exciting as it was?
Oh, he's the guy who you can, if you wanted to, you could make the case for him number one on this list. If you are just, if you said, give me the guy who has the chance to be the best of this group, there's a chance for Emmanuel Rodriguez. But you would also, to me, that'd be too aggressive right now. As you noted, it's not even a half season.
You're right. It's actually close to a third of a season now that I look at it. Yeah.
Right. It's like a great April and May, and then end of season, knee injury for him. And so you're like, okay, you want to see him do it over a longer stretch of time. That said, to go back to the Royce Lewis point I made, hitting the ball hard is not something you can fake. Emmanuel Rodriguez, for his age, for the level he was at, had the ability to consistently hit the ball exceptionally hard. And on top of that, now, if you want to argue, you could argue he's a little too passive. Emmanuel Rodriguez says, this is the strike zone. This is the strike zone. I will not swing outside of this zone. I can be beaten sometimes inside this zone, but you will not beat me by throwing sliders, you know, two strike sliders off the plate, by bouncing a curveball, by throwing a changeup below the zone. All of that, I am immune to that. Those do not bother me. If you want to beat me, you're going to have to beat me in the strike zone. And for a teenage hitter, that's a great start. If you said, give me the building blocks of a guy and said he understands the strike zone to an extremely advanced level for his age, and he hits the ball really hard when he makes contact, great. So I've got the point, the parts right there to be a high OBP, high slugging guy. Now, can he be beaten in the zone with quality stuff? Yeah, that's the to-do list for him. That said, okay, this is a very different to-do list than most teenage hitters that we talk about. Usually we're talking about them. I mean, hundreds of players over the years were like, yeah, he's got great bat speed. If he makes contact, he hits it really hard, but he's vulnerable to chasing sliders out of the zone, or you can get him to expand, or once he learns to just lay off that pitch, then he's going to really do something. Emmanuel Rodriguez already knows how to do that, and that's a really hard skill to have at the age he has it, and that's what gives him the chance to be, if it all comes together, a really top-tier hitter, because that's kind of one of the hardest skills to develop. But he now needs to be healthy. He now needs to show he can do it over a longer season. And he now needs to show that as he faces better competition, better pitching, that he can, again, that he can win in the zone more than he loses. Such,
yeah,
again, I would take that over the other, but quality fastballs can a little bit sometimes be an issue for him.
Yeah, certainly a very exciting player. Like you said, it's 47 games at low A, so you can't completely pull the trigger yet, but you see the base foundation that certainly gets you excited. JJ, as we were putting this list together, again, you spearheaded it. We all talked through it. The top three prospects in this system were very, very clear cut. Once you got into the middle group, though, this kind of 4 to 7 range, it was very fluid. A lot of guys with the exact same grades on them, moving them around a little bit. How did you kind of stack this group up, and ultimately, how did you settle on it the way you did?
Yeah, the rest of this was almost like, I think at one point, Louis Varlin may have been fourth on this list, and he ended up eighth. So just to give you an idea, like, it's kind of like, what is your preference here? We ended up with Edward Julian as our number four prospect. And remember what I just talked about when long time ago, we talked about Emmanuel Rodriguez and we talked about guys who can hit for power and get on base. Well, that's Edward. That's Julian. That's like, that's what he does. Now,
well, he can hit, period. He's got one of the most, I had never seen him before the fall league this year. And it's going insane. That's one of the most beautiful left-handed swings you'll see. Just line drives over the shortstop's head in the left center. And he was the talk leader. That's a beautiful left-handed swing.
It is. Now, when we talked about Royce Lewis and we said, where can he play defensively? And we said, I think he can play almost anywhere if you needed him to. Edward Julian's kind of the opposite of that. And if you say, where can he play defensively? It's like, I don't know if he can play anywhere regularly. That's the question. Like, he has tried to play third. He's tried to play second. There's a lot of defensive questions with him, and they aren't getting a whole lot better. I mean, he's not a terrible athlete. It's not like he's not got some athleticism. He's just not a very fluid, smooth, consistent defender. And wherever he plays, the ball does seem to find him in less than opportune ways. But I kind of do say with that, like, if you can hit, that's the most important thing you can do. And so there are going to be reasons to try to figure out a way to find him a spot. And much of what we're saying about him, his defense is worse. But when we're talking about Jose Miranda a year ago, there were questions about where he would fit defensively. And we just said, if you're hit, they'll figure it out. And to Miranda's credit, he's hit, so they're trying to figure it out. You kind of hope if you're the Twins that that's what you're talking about with Edward Julian, where you say, let's work him in as a DH to start with, maybe, and then let's figure it out from there. He does have position versatility. He just doesn't have a lot of positional value almost wherever you put him.
Yeah, I mean, right now you look at the Twins starting lineup and they don't really have a clear DH. I mean, I guess if you wanted to, you could put Nick Gordon as your DH or give, Trevor Larnach or Ryan Jeffers some at-bats there, mixing and matching some guys in. But yeah, I mean, this is one of those situations where if you just say, okay, Edward Julian, go be our DH every day and mash and be a really good, impactful offensive player, I think he could do it. And yeah, the bat's certainly promising. And as you said, if you can hit, someone will find a spot for you. Ty France is the ultimate example of that. JJ, moving down this system, how would you describe the strengths of this system? We've talked about, at times they've had trouble developing pitching, but you look at the top 10, it's evenly spread out, 5 pitchers, 5 position players. What would you kind of say are the strengths of the system and where are some holes that still need to be filled?
Strength-wise, they have a lot of guys they'll have a triple-A rotation of pitchers who – some of whom have graduated from this list. Josh Winder is not eligible for this list anymore, but they'll have a rotation of pitchers who, if you rewind the clock to 2 years ago, many of whom would be in their rotation if they were of that caliber. Like, you look at a guy like a Louis Varlin, you look at a Simeon Woods Richardson, you look at, again, we just talked about Josh Winder. Those are probably right now that's penciled in to be part of their triple A rotation. You could throw Jordan Milosevic, had a very disappointing year last year, but bounce back candidate in his case. You could throw maybe even like you could throw Matt, once he comes back from injury, I think Matt Canarino probably just goes to the pen, but they have a lot of pitchers who have upper level experience who should be able to help a big league club in 2023. So that's the strength. The weakness, I would say, is I don't think their depth is what it was. And I can give you a pretty quick answer for why. So let's go through the 2021 draft for the Twins. Okay. Chase Petty, first round pick, traded. Okay. Noah Miller, supplemental first round pick, still a Twin. Steven Hajar from Michigan, the lefty, second round pick, traded. Cade Povich, the third round pick, traded. Christian Encarnacion Strand, the fourth round pick, traded. Are you sensing a theme here? Like, they have traded a number of these guys to make moves to try to help the big league club. And so if you trade four of your top five picks from the draft 2 years ago, your depth probably, Cade Povich is a really interesting guy for the Orioles now, but that's the guy who, if he was part of this Twins list, he'd be in the top 10 probably right now. Had a really good breakout year. So I don't think the depth is what it was, especially when the list you do, like you get to the 30, that 20 to 30 range on some list, you're like, oh, I still really think these guys project as solid, potentially solid big leaguers if it all breaks right. And then you get to the back of the Twins list and you had guys like Aaron Sabato, who really hasn't done a whole lot since being a first round pick. And you have guys like Steven Cruz, who they've since have moved. When we did this list, he's been, you know, he's gone now, but it's like, this is a hard throwing reliever who's kind of hasn't ever figured it out. You have guys like Michael Hellman here, like, okay, this is a utility guy if it all breaks right. There's just not the depth that there was a few years ago because of all the moves they've made.
Yeah, but I think at the same time, you say if you could trade depth prospects for big league starters as they've done, it's certainly a worthwhile trade. Mm-hmm. You mentioned him real quick, real briefly. I do want to ask you, what's the latest on Aaron Sabato and also Keone Cavaco, back-to-back first-round picks that so far, at least statistically, have not worked out? What's the latest on both of them?
So Sabato did make the very back of the 30. And I would say, as I just said, that partly because the back of this 30 was really thin. Keone Cavaco did not make the 30. He did not make the 40. He's like, the reality of it is the Twins have really, really struggled, especially those couple of years there with first round picks. They've been a lot better. Actually, the thing that they've been really good at is kind of the mid-round pitcher who ends up, they've done better with the Louis Varlins and the David Festas and the guys like that, the Cade Poviches, than they have with their first-round picks. And, but no, I mean, the reality is Sabato has reached double A. He really just struggles to hit quality pitching, which when you are a bat-only profile, I mean, he's a first baseman who's, does not run, not great defensively. When you're a bat-only profile, that's kind of rough. And Keone Cavaco, over and over, like, you have your profiles, like the high school pitcher. If you had tell Kyle, hey, I've seen this high school pitcher, he throws 101 right now. Kyle's
run,
like,
run away as fast as you can. Run, treat him like he throws 82 and run.
Right. That's not a Kyle demographic. Okay, I'll give you my version
that's,
of that.
That's not it's a successful Keone demographic Cavaco at all.
But here's mine. The guy who is the high school position player who didn't play or didn't perform during the summer showcase circuit, but looks great that, and well, for whatever reason it is, whether it's he was hurt the summer before, whether it's he really didn't get exposure the summer before, whatever it is, the guy who everyone runs in to see that spring of his draft year and goes, wow, this guy looks great. And the reason I say that is that when I think of Austin Beck and when I think of Keone Cavaco and when I think of Connor Scott and when I think of guys like this, there's just too many examples of this where this is why I do believe the success rate on high school position players has actually gotten better. When you get to see those guys over a full summer facing quality pitching week in, week out, you get a much better read. I don't care what Keone Cavaco came from, one of the best areas of the country as far as high school talent, but you're still not going to see the consistency of what you see pitching wise in the summer showcase circuit.
So it was really interesting, you know, Kavako being kind of in my old stomping grounds. He went to Eastlake High School. And it was actually, I remember I've talked about this before on previous Twins podcasts. So longtime listeners, forgive me if you're hearing this again. Doing draft calls that year for SoCal, Keone Kavako was one of the most polarizing players around. And what it was the cross checkers who were dropping in to see him for a game or two games. They loved him because they saw these big tools. They saw athleticism. He was super young. And they were like, yep, I'm biting. And then they moved on to their next target. The area scouts who were watching him day in and day out throughout the season were saying he can't hit anyone above 86, 87. And I wouldn't take him. I mean, the best I heard was like fifth, sixth round. So the area guys were not on it for the most part. There were a few, but for the most part, the area guys were not. But the cross checkers loved it. He had put up some big data during a batting practice in Anaheim that a lot of the people, the analysts around, loved it. But the people who actually watched him day in and day out were like, this is a fifth, sixth rounder if you like him, and it's more of a raw tools pick. I just don't see him hitting even slightly above average high school pitching very consistently. And then Aaron Sabato, I remember one of the more interesting dynamics that came out of the 2020 draft, as we're seeing is not off to a great start, was that was a year, obviously, evaluators had to do everything on video. I remember talking to a scout who had seen him, you know, video as an amateur, and then saw him in his pro debut, and he talked about it. It's very, very, very hard to get a good read on bat speed on video. And when you're watching on video, you couldn't see it as well as once you got out and watched him live. It was clear from day one, he did not have the bat speed to catch up. You mentioned high quality pitching. He didn't have the bat speed to catch up to 91, 92. In low A as a college draftee. And so I think those are two interesting case studies of, you know, where things in the draft can kind of go wrong. 2019, you're going off data and, you know, short looks when the guys who are on the ground every week are saying, hey, this just isn't there. He doesn't hit enough. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I heard that about Kavako, but then my calls with cross checkers, they loved him. And then 2020, again, the limits of video scouting when it comes to bat speed, it can be tougher to tell. Now, some guys, they're outliers and you can see it from a mile away, but there's other guys where it might look fine on video. Then you see it in person. It's like, oh, that's at least a tick too slow, if not two or three. And it seems like that's what happened with Sabato.
Yeah. So, but I would say on the flip side, to kind of end this on a more positive note, I do think there are also some young, especially some young international signees, like we didn't, you know, who we haven't talked about, who are very interesting. Yasser Mercedes almost made the top 10. That's a kind of a fascinating dude. Brian Acuna, may recognize that last name. you should. Is a guy who when I started writing it, I kind of thought he was going to be at the back of the top 30. And then you write him, and as you write him, and then you make another call or two, and you're like, he just keeps moving up. Because, you know, I love, this is part of the process I love. You write guys, and sometimes you write a guy, and the mere process of writing out what he is, what you think he is, I should say, moves him up or it moves him down. Because once you kind of put it on digital, you know, on the digital page, it kind of solidifies everything for you. And Brian Acuna is one of those guys who, the more you kind of thought about it, it's like, this guy's really good. This guy's really interesting. Far away, but there's a lot of good attributes here. And I do feel like that this is the team that has a couple of those guys who will be interesting to watch and to see what they turn out for in 23, 24, really in some cases, 25, 26, because we're talking about very young players.
And the good news is they don't have to be rushed. We've talked about it. The Twins are a team that are built to compete now. They've made a lot of moves to that effect. And who knows, maybe these guys will be used in trade pieces given the Twins' actions the last few years. I think it's very likely given that's the track they're on. At the same time, if they keep them, they can let them develop at their own pace, don't have to rush anybody, which at the end of the day is always the best thing for both the player and the franchise itself. JJ, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciated your insight and time as always. It's always great talking baseball with you.
It is always fun. Thank you, Kyle.
All right, everyone, that'll do it for another BA podcast. Go ahead and give us a review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever platform you're listening on. We'd love to hear from you. For JJ Cooper, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening. Have a good one.